is 408, News Talk Saga 960. Barry Davis, Michelle Sterino with you on a Thursday afternoon, and it's always good to be with you here on the airwaves. And as you heard, we were just playing a little Pearl Jam to get our little session kicked off this afternoon. And why not when we are joined by probably one of the biggest Pearl Jam fans you're ever going to want to meet, former Toronto Blue Jay, Jason Gurley. So, girls, what would be your favorite Pearl Jam tune of all time?
Black is definitely one, and I relate to a lot of it right now. But yeah, black is good, man. There's too many to count, but if I had to narrow it down and do a bracketology of my favorite Pearl Jam songs, I've narrowed it down to that one.
Have you seen them multiple times in concert?
Yeah, I have a handful of times. I need to do a handful more. Obviously, now that baseball season won't be in the way, I might have an opportunity to do that. So yeah, there's. I think he's playing solo out west sometime. I'd love to see him play one of those concerts too. I think I gotta take a trip. I'm trying to take as many trips, road trips as I can, and one being we're gonna talk about, right?
Absolutely.
Well, and you talk about Eddie Vedder. He's never really alone on stage because he always has a bottle of wine. I feel like there's always sort of alcohol accompaniment that he kind of gets into and everything. I saw him live a few times as well. Even Flow is my fave. How about you, Barry? Do you have a favorite Pearl Jam song?
Yeah, you know what? There are many that I would say are my favorite Pearl Jam songs. But yeah, I like Black, I like Brother, and I like Daughter. Daughter's, yeah, one of my favorites. I could go on all day talking Pearl Jam, but let's talk a little baseball, girls. And as you mentioned off the top, thanks to the fine folks at Alomar Sports, they've got a really cool trip coming up. What can you tell us about what is happening with you, Ricky Romero, and a bunch of Blue Jays fans this summer?
Well, I used to watch people eating beer and nachos while we played and be jealous of that. And they were envious of us being able to be on the field and be big leaguers. So I get to join the fans and just hang out in Seattle as a fan of my favorite team growing up, and just mix in and watch a weekend series with the fans of Toronto that will be going on that trip. So I'm excited to go with the crew, some Blue Jay alumni, and you know we packed that house in Seattle. It's pretty awesome event, a good weekend series for the Blue Jays. It's a home game, as everybody knows. It's the West Coast part of Canada. Get to come down and do it up nice, man. And Seattle's one of my favorite cities that I used to travel, one of my top three between New York City, Chicago, and Seattle. Those are my top three. And I'm psyched to come back out and just be a fan. Just be a fan, eat some beer and nachos, and hang out with some great Blue Jay fans.
Well, I think Seattle is a given since we were talking about Pearl Jam, too, right? Is that part of the reason why?
There you go. Well, yes, of course.
Always that association there.
Of course, grunge music, where it started, right? So, it's the genre that I grew up loving. And, what a great way to celebrate. You got something to look forward to. What's the actual date? I think it's August 23rd. I can't remember what it was.
I got it right here. August 23rd to the 25th. And, you get two nights accommodation at the four-star Sheraton Seattle. Field-level tickets for the three games with the Blue Jays and Mariners. A private pregame event, which I imagine is going to also involve beer and nachos. And if you want more information on how to get tickets for this event, go to alomarsports.com. They have all of that. Now, you've been doing some other stuff with Alomar Sports too, right? You were at Fantasy Camp last year. Is that something you'd like to go back and do again?
Oh, man, it was a riot. It was such a good time. It's way better when you get to put the uniform on. And even though I did, just even trying to throw BP, I was like, oh, my God, just taking a year off, you realize how much conditioning goes into trying to throw a ball 95 miles an hour. But it was fun just to watch the all the fans just go out there and live a dream and just be just a lot of laughs. You laugh with and you laugh at during those times. I can't believe how much people were just burning the candle at both ends. I'll just say that.
Yep.
And still going out there and ripping, having a great time. But it's hard to keep up with Canadians. I'll tell you that. It's, they know you guys all know how to have a good time, and
you know,
I sure did. But like you said,
I was at two of those fantasy camps, the first two that Alomar had, and two things that I learned. Number one, anyone who says baseball players are not athletes can kiss my butt because, well, I'm not really an athlete either, girls, but I woke up the morning after the first day when we were doing drills and stuff, and I thought of myself as being relatively in shape. You know, I hit the treadmill every so often, but I got up the next morning, Jason, I put my foot down on the ground. I did not think I was going to be able to stand up. I mean, is that something that you've ever experienced, like when you maybe just take the field for the first time after taking a whole bunch of time off?
Well, I mean, I'd like to be eating beer and nachos, as I said, but I know being that close to the game, it's going to be, you never feel like you're done with the game, or you miss just one more inning, just one more inning above the pitch. So, you know, I know it would hurt a little bit, but I'm staying in shape with my kids. My kids are playing ball. And it's fun to be a coach and be their dad. And, you know, I'm just glad that they like baseball. And I say, hey, you guys don't have to do this because of me, but it's a gift just to spend time and to know that baseball is just something that's kind of a rite of passage as you grow up. And my oldest son, being 11, this is when it kind of starts to get a little intense with the travel ball and stuff. So we'll really see if he's got the love and admiration for it as I did. And I told him again, I said, if this isn't your cup of tea, man, you know, it's okay. But hopefully, like I said, a third generation Grilly may come out to pass. We'll see. We'll see. But it's just fun to be with my boys in retirement. I'm enjoying that. And I can't wait to take them to a few games and after they play their respective seasons.
When you were playing, can I ask you your perspective and then maybe possibly give me a little bit of a general perspective? I know you obviously can't speak for all other major leaguers, but how much thought did you put into life after baseball while you were playing?
I think I did a lot for several reasons. One, I was injured a lot. I had some major career injuries that made me scared about things. And I think one of the blessings that kept me in the game was my signing bonus, being a first-round pick. Truthfully, I was smart with my money, and when some of those things happen, you know, it kept me in the game. Some guys have to walk away for financial reasons and other reasons too. But, yeah, I think that's kind of the reason why I've been blessed to play so long. I just kept at it and didn't want to take the uniform off, you know.
We're in conversation with former Blue Jays pitcher Jason Grilly, always a fan favorite here. And you mentioned your love for Seattle, so I've got to ask you your thoughts on seeing Ichiro take his final at-bats. I guess it was early this morning because they're playing out in Japan. The reception he got, and Jason, as a guy who pitched and had to face him in your career, how good was this guy? Because his numbers just look insane when you see his career 311 average.
Yeah, I mean, the Hall of Famer is just, there's a red carpet for that guy. I mean, what he's accomplished both on his own home soil and here in the States. I mean, it's amazing what he's accomplished. And you're right. He deserves every accolade he gets. And, you know, it's nice to see athletes that have that telltale story where they can kind of finish where they started. And what an honor for him. I mean, I faced him a few times. It's not fun, you know, because he's just a guy that, he can take you deep or you just slap the ball a certain way. So, you know, you got to find some holes and just sometimes just feel like you're lucky. Throw it down the middle, let him get himself out. There's some guys that are just like that. You're like, hey, man, the probability is there. The laws of physics, they're either going to – that's why I think this favors the pitcher. It's just the laws of physics. You know, we get four chances. They get three, you know, to get them out. So – that's why I chose to be a pitcher. I like to be in the advantage category.
You know, one thing I learned about Ichiro, that is never stand in the third base camera bay with your head in your phone, because before you know it, a screeching line drive off the bat of Ichiro could be coming right at your head. And that happened to me when he was with the Yankees. And I was in that Blue Jays third base camera bay. Someone yelled, "Look out." I lifted up my arm and the line drive just went right off my elbow. And thank God it went off my elbow, or I would have taken it right in the noggin. But holy moly, I don't know how you guys ever do that. Like whether you get drilled anywhere in the body. I've seen pitchers get drilled in the arm and they pick up the ball and throw it to first. Have you ever been hit by a line drive?
Oh yeah. Like I said, you know, and Ichiro is one that will do that. He's a guy that, you know, a lot of those guys, people say, who do you hate kind of to face and who was your worst opponent. I said, you know, those type of guys, those guys that'll throw, you'll throw a whole inning sometimes. You throw the kitchen sink at them and they'll make you throw 9, 10, 11, 12 pitches. It's a whole inning's worth of work just to one bat because they're locked in. He's that good. But as far as getting hit by a pitch or a ball back at you, had almost one almost killed me.
Jeez.
I can't remember who it was. But I was with the Blue Jays. We were in Chicago.
Oh, I remember that.
And,
yes.
Someone almost killed me with the line drive back in my face, but I got hit in minor leagues by Ben Davis. I threw up a sinker and he had a linea right off my ankle and I couldn't walk. My ankle swelled pretty good, but it's part of it. I mean, you just hope nowadays, I mean, the reaction time, that's all you can hope for. I hate seeing pitchers or anybody, a batter, you know, I mean, Carlos Stanton getting hit in the face. It's never fun to watch and witness, or let alone do it to somebody else and really harm their potential career. So, you know, we respect each other as athletes and ball players, and it's part of the game, certainly. But it's our job to either catch it or get the hell out of the way.
Absolutely. And you talk about just Ichiro and kind of, you know, being able to kind of go back to where he came from in terms of the success of his career. And I guess you kind of got a chance to go back to where your family's from as your special assistant for international baseball relations, right? For the Italian Baseball Association. So, and softball associations, rather.
Michelle's
so
Italian,
us,
by the way.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. And I just give us your background because, you know, you could tell the last name is obviously of Italian descent. And I think being in a multicultural Toronto, you were, you know, kind of welcomed in terms of that regard because there is a large Italian population here compared to other cities. But just tell us where, you know, your family's from, and then when you were in Italy, because I do follow you on Instagram as well. I kind of saw you in and traveling in and around the country, so I'm just wondering where exactly you went and if you went anywhere close to where your family's from.
Well, the convention was, international convention was in Mancione, and my buddy who's the president of the union that they're trying to form over there. He lives in Livorno. So we kind of were there. My dad and I came in and we're just trying to help them. All the AEIOUs of the league over there and the softball players, and they even have a blind league. So something maybe you can look up on YouTube. Pretty interesting how they use this ball that has bells in it. And these people are unbelievably talented. It's hard enough to hit a baseball when you can see it. And these people throw it and hit it without seeing it. So it's pretty crazy, but it's really neat what's going on over there. They're trying to strengthen baseball. Obviously, soccer's king and will always be king in Europe and especially in Italy. But the leagues over there need some help. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are good. I mean, you saw the WBC, how Italy's kind of a name to be reckoned with. It's not just a token team that just shows up and they guys two and out. We've had some success. I got to play in the first three. And the reason being, to answer your questions, I know you asked me a few, I'm 75% Italian. I was able to establish my citizenship in my sophomore year of college because I got asked, I was an alternate to try out for Team USA in the 96 Olympic Games. And then come to pass, I got a crazy phone call from my college coach to come in his office. Because he got a call that says, hey, Team Italy wants you to play on their team, but you just got to prove your heritage and go get your Italian passport and citizenship. I'm like,
wow.
How the heck do I do that? So luckily, Seton Hall University in New Jersey was right outside of New York City. So I called my parents. They came down. They helped me go to the consulate. We got all our documentation, got everything, proved my heritage. There's a loophole that even though my grandfather was born here on U.S. soil is when all the naturalization process was going in immigration. And even though he was born here, he wasn't yet a U.S. citizen. So there was still that tie back to the motherland of Italy. And, you might even check that out yourself.
Well,
if you don't have it.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, it's funny because I've thought about it myself and I'm technically more Italian than you because both my parents were born there. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's how that all happened. I didn't get to play for Team Italy. It's a whole other sidebar story because the team was they threatened to strike and have a team representative. They let me and what they considered two other Italian Americans play on their team, which I get. They were taking some spots from them, and it was the last year that amateurs were supposed to be playing at the time in those games. But it was a heartbreak thing. It wound up working out better for me because I went back to the Cape League. But again, that opened the door for me playing in the WBC three times. We've had good success, and it was a cool thing. So then now, you know, just out of baseball, expanding baseball, making the game better. I love and respect it. That's what my dad taught me, old school. Kind of coincides with Italian family heritage. We pride ourselves in that, strong in that. And got to go over there. They paid my way, my dad's way, and we had a great time. And just trying to help out any way we can. I mean, to be able to do it in America here, baseball is one of the best professional sports we got here. And they want it over there. They want sponsorships and deals. And I said, instead of maybe hot dogs and hamburgers, they might have wine, cheese, and some cannolis. I don't know. It would be interesting to see if they get it to that stage. I definitely would love to see a ball game with even 5 or 10,000 people over there. But I think, like I said, their facilities aren't quite what we have. So they're trying to get that going, and to help and be a part of that. I certainly want to be a part of that, and it gives me reason to go over to visit as many times as possible.
Hey, Grills, thank you so much for joining us on short notice. All the best to you. Stay well, and enjoy that trip to Seattle with the Blue Jay fans this summer.
Yeah, man, I look forward to seeing everybody up there. Can't wait.
Now, back to the spin with Barry Davis on Saga 960 AM.
Oh, yes. Whenever we talk about Hollywood, that means we're going to talk about the world of entertainment. And, Michelle, I know that you were absolutely psyched this week because you showed me, I come into the studio, and you show me the brand new trailer for the brand new season of Stranger Things. And to talk a little bit about the hype around that show and some of the other things going on in the world of entertainment, our pal Bill Harris joins us. Bill, are you a Stranger Things guy? Is this a show that you were addicted to like so many of us?
As I recall, Barry, our early days covering the Raptors were the basis for Stranger Things. So
yes, it's true.
Yes, I'm quite familiar with it. Yes. Yes, no, I am a fan of the show. It I don't know if I'm necessarily in the quote-unquote target audience for it, but in this day and age where you can find good content anywhere, regardless of who it's targeted for, yes, I'm a big fan of the show.
What do you mean? Why wouldn't you be targeted for this show, Bill?
You know, I was going to say, you know what, that's
Come
funny.
Come on, man.
But, you know, I thought the same thing, Bill. I'm watching this, I'm thinking, am I too old to be watching a show about teenagers, right?
Yeah, but don't you get nostalgic even seeing all that stuff?
Do you think,
I get nostalgic.
Do you think that's what it is, Bill? Do you think that's why folks of our age kind of gravitate to a show like this?
Well, I personally wasn't born in 1985, so I don't really know what you guys are talking
about. No, I wasn't born in 85. I was
born in around that time.
I was in my late teens in 1985, Billy.
Sadly, I was even older than that. I was a young man. See, this new season is set in 1985, so that would have made me 22 at the time.
Oh, my God, you are old.
Tell me about it. I see that in the mirror every day. Nonetheless, I think that's one of the reasons for the great success of the show, and also, I believe, one of the ironies of it, guys, because on the one hand, yes, of course, we those of us who grew up or, you know, in quote-unquote in that era, there are so many pop culture references and so many sort of, you know, electronic gadgets or things that you see that really does make it kind of a fun, nostalgic ride. I'm sure that young people, you know, who are the age of the kids in the show are looking at it going, what the hell is all of that stuff? They don't even understand any of it. But isn't it ironic, though, that beyond the you know, physical trappings of how cool the show looks, not only with the supernatural elements, but also with the nostalgic elements, that what I think we long for when we watch a show like that is, I think the most attractive thing is it reminds us of what it's like to have an unsupervised youth. And isn't it funny that as we watch that show, we're watching it even as our generation, our society has combined to take that away from youth today. And yet that is what we, I believe, are responding to in terms of the nostalgia. It's not just the way things look. It's that, oh God, those kids can go out at night. They have lives that exist between the, you know, the minivan and the rec center. And it's a nice to remember that there once was a time where that was possible.
Is that why you think that a show like this has such a cult following, and why so many, I guess, different Netflix shows have a cult following? And how do these shows even gather that cult following in the first place, you know?
It's interesting. Like, I think at the heart of it, honestly, a show just has to be good to start with, if you know what I mean. Like, we can dress it up any way we want. And the fact, like, another show not done by people who are as deft, or who have such a finger on the pulse of what people might want, could have all these trappings and still not be any damn good. And we would not be, you know, talking about it on a Thursday afternoon on the radio. So first of all, it's just well done. They've had a great story. I think kind of hits into that thing that is popular now where, you know, we need more, something more to our stories than just real life, it seems. It's got to be superheroes, or it's got to be some sort of supernatural. That's what it takes to draw us in the large extent. So it's got a lot of elements combined together, nostalgic, and yet it's about kids. So the entire, you know, everybody can watch it. And yet, whenever you hear that horrible thing where they say family viewing, you know, where you just want to run and hide because you know it's going to be so unbelievably boring, this is family viewing, but it's not boring. And I think they've hit on so many things that way. But if it weren't a good show to start with, none of that would matter.
I have to say as well, the soundtracks have been phenomenal as well throughout the first couple seasons. Just like the theme music as well. I love the theme music. And I believe it was, I can't remember if it was the final episode of season one or season two, Peter Gabriel did a cover of a Foo Fighters song. It was just phenomenally done. Just the music itself, too, just kind of like traps you in and gets you so emotionally involved, and is all part of, I guess, the nostalgia and everything that, you know, is a big reason why, you know, so many people kind of love the show and binge watch it.
And you know what? I'll go, and I totally agree, and I also will go beyond that, though, but they're also not tied. They're not so tied to their era that they can't make choices that are the best things for the show. Small example: in the trailer that we saw that just came out for season three, the main song, outside, you know, they start with a song that's of the era from 1985, but the main song that drives that trailer is "Won't Get Fooled Again" by The Who. And it's not that, now that is not a period song.
Right.
That's a song from 1971. However, they know that's a great choice and it fits the trailer perfectly. So that to me is a sign that, like, again, lesser people would sit there and go, oh crap, that song's not from, we got to use a song specifically from 1985. No, you don't, because all music before 1985 still existed in 1985. So it's like little things like that where they do the right thing at the right moment, as opposed to making, you know, an easier and almost an easier choice that you don't have to think about so much. So kudos to them. Like, listen, guys, when we're in an era now of TV and movies. I mean, just with the trailer we discussed last week, you know, when a trailer can garner so much attention, and we now have, you know, an avenue through social media that, you know, everybody can see a trailer when it first comes out. In the old days, trailers came out and maybe you saw them in the theater for, you know, 2 minutes before the feature presentation. And now a trailer can make as much news as the show or the movie itself.
Bill Harris joins us here on The Spin on News Talk Saga 960. And we should also talk about the cast, because I think they did a great job casting the show. And I think everyone seems to love, I think it's, is it Gaetan Matarazzo?
Right.
He's saying everyone, but it's really him. He's the biggest fan
of him.
Oh
my God. I love the kid. I think he's great. And I know that, you know, he's done so many things since then, but this is what people know him from. And, you know, in the way of the things are in Hollywood too, if you see, I mean, he's got the issue with his teeth coming in, right? And that was something that they didn't even try to hide. And as a kid himself, he was comfortable enough with it to be, yeah, let me make that part of the character. But I think that the casting is done so well, too. Even Winona Ryder is good in this.
It's interesting that you sound so surprised, Barry. What did Winona Ryder ever do to you?
Oh, no, I loved the, Edward Scissorhands, man. I had a little bit of crush going on her.
Yes, Barry. You and every male of that age had a crush on Winona Ryder, for sure. It's funny how you talk about casting. It is the toughest thing, and yet especially when you're casting young people, it's the trickiest thing. I think a number of people in this cast are quite special. Not only Gayton, as you mentioned, but I think Millie Bobby Brown, who plays 11, I think she's outstanding. Yeah. And, Millie Bobby Brown, what a great name, by the way. I always think she should be a rap star, yeah. but there's a number of them who I think are quite special. Now we're going to get an interesting look at it this year, and it's part of the challenge of quote unquote casting kids. Also, you know, they're not little kids, but you know, casting teens. Often when you cast young people, you might cast them great for the time. Then if the show continues, sometimes the kids don't, you know, grow up the way that you would like them to grow up in terms of either their acting abilities or their looks. Sometimes kids who were perfect for the part when they were a certain age, 3 years later, they aren't so perfect for the part, and you're kind of stuck. It's the challenge on TV with a lot of shows, you know, that I can mention. So we're now, you know, several years into, you know, I guess 3 years into the show in terms of chronological time for the show, probably closer to 4 years in terms of filming. So it's going to be interesting to see, of all those kids who we grew to love through Stranger Things first two seasons, maybe other ones will emerge as stronger actors. You never know. Sometimes the ones who start out as the strongest ones don't end the journey as the strongest ones. So it's always interesting to watch young actors that way, especially when they get to stick together for a number of years.
I'm pretty sure this is the final season. They said only three seasons for Stranger Things. And with that news as well came the...
You say it.
Yes. Yeah. The sixth and final season is upon us for Bleeps Creek, was what we're going to be calling
it. You know, I once, because Eugene Levy's a big, huge Blue Jays fan, right? So I once asked him how they got away with it. And he said, well, it was really easy, you know. We just put the C and the H in there, and that made all the difference in the world, Miss Prickly. Sorry, that's my Eugene Levy. But what do you find that this show really has kind of, A, shown that the appeal of Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, not to mention the talent of his son, Dan Levy, who does a lot of writing, directing, and acting as well. They really show what they're made of in that family.
Yeah, it's a show that had some. Now I got to be honest. When they announced that next season, the sixth season, would be the final season, of course, the first thing that goes through my mind is, it's been six seasons already for the show. Where the hell did that time go? It doesn't seem like it's been that long. But it's had some staying power. It's got some attention in the U.S. and in other countries. It has had a nice run. Now I mean, obviously a big Eugene Levy fan and a big Catherine O'Hara fan, good dating back to my youth on SCTV. And they have, you know, really sort of embodied those characters and done a good job in a hard landscape, which is TV comedy. I'll tell you my preference for the show. There were times in that show where, you know, it turned a little bit more into what I would call a dramedy. At times,
yeah.
I preferred the pure comedy of it, but that's just a personal thing. Like, that's why I always loved Seinfeld. Why did I love, you know, because A, it was funny, and B, there were no tender moments interspersed in Seinfeld. It was just pure comedy. That's why I love Veep now. It's just a pure comedy. So I preferred the parts of, as you would call it, Bleeps Creek. that were pure comedy. And I thought Chris Elliott, who I've always loved.
Oh, man, yeah.
You know, I could watch Chris Elliott all day. But he, so those are the moments that I will remember the most fondly of the show when it really embraced the comedy of it. The more dramatic parts, I sometimes I didn't think worked as well. However, I admire the show and I admire its run.
Do you think that it managed to get over the Canadian feel to it? Because I know a lot of TV shows that are Canadian shows, and, you know, they always used to make the reference to, you know, the Beachcombers. Yeah, it's just another Beachcombers type show. Everything that was Canadian looked Canadian. You know what I mean? Do you think that it this show looked Canadian?
I actually don't think it did. And I talked to them, the cast and creators, about that like a few years ago when the show was in its earlier stages. They filmed a lot of it in a place called Goodwood, Ontario, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a small little town north of Toronto, northeast of Toronto. It's taking it there. I put it this way: in my job in the TV criticism world, et cetera, TV writing world, I see a lot of stuff, and what you get sick of is a lot of stuff that absolutely looks the same. And when everything looks the same, then it's hard to feel different. It sounds simple, but it's something that sometimes TV creators should remember. If you take a show someplace that we're just not used to seeing, then a lot of your work is done for you in terms of creating an atmosphere where I believe that this place is an actual place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Taking it to this little town north of Ontario where everything looks, it doesn't look like you're on a soundstage in Toronto or Vancouver, I thought added a lot to it. I got a sense watching that show that place was a real place, and that is it's a tough thing to do, but if you can do it, then you always should. The easiest way to do it sometimes is to take it on the road. Now sometimes that's more expensive and it's not an option, I realize, but I think it worked with that show in particular. It looked like a small town in the middle of nowhere. It felt like it, and that's where the characters were allowed to live.
Billy, always fun. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
All right, maybe there will be more Stranger Things next week.
Oh, yes.
Ooh,
love that. There is Bill Harris, who joins us each and every Thursday.
Hopefully
here.
He won't be up Bleeps Creek without a paddle. I'm ready to play today. Pull me in, coach. I'm ready to play today.
Look at me. I can be Centennial. And now, Behind the Plate with Brian Giroloman on Saga 960 AM. Well, I spent some time in the Mudville
night. Watching it from as we wait for Brian Giroloman to join us here on News Talk Saga 960, Michelle.
We do have a Harlem Globetrotters ticket giveaway, which we're going to be starting
up next week, right?
That's right, next week. So, of course, the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters are coming to Mississauga's Paramount's Fine Food Center Saturday, April the 6th. So you can listen to us right here at Saga 960 AM for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to their all-new fan-powered world tour where fans will be able to interact with the Globetrotters. Are you kidding me?
That is very cool.
Barry, how do we get to do this?
Oh, I'm going. I'm somehow going to get there, and I know we're going to have a Globetrotter here in studio.
So starting April 1st, actually, you can listen daily to either, of course, Raw Mike Richards in the mornings from 6 to 9 or The Spin with Barry and myself from 4 to 7 for your chance to win that four-pack of tickets. And I'm very, very intrigued by all of this. I also haven't played basketball since my high school reunion. So I had a high school reunion for my basketball team.
Why would you have a high school reunion? By the way, Brian Giroloman will join us in a couple minutes. He's running a little late, but he told us he will be ready in a couple minutes. High school reunion so early? Like usually they have a 25-year high school reunion.
No, we had an early one because our basketball coach was so instrumental and he unfortunately got sick.
Oh,
and,
I see.
He was a huge part of both the men's and women's teams at our high school. So I remember, man, I went for the, I felt like I could jump through the roof when I went for that alumni game, because I was the younger side of the alumni at that point too, right? So I was only out of high school for just a few years. I was a young whippersnapper compared to most people. So, but that was the last time literally I've played basketball. So it would be interesting if I were to try, you know, my crossover behind the back. Well, you were a point guard, right?
Yeah, I sucked.
You sucked?
Yes. Brian Drolleman joins us now. Brian, did you ever play hoops at all?
I was a family disappointment for basketball because my dad played college basketball, and I never take shots. I just pass the ball.
Well, it's because you can't squat and play basketball at the same time.
No, you can't. My brother was a ball hog, so, I mean, you know, it was a tough situation.
Yeah, well, that doesn't help at all.
I was atrocious.
Yeah. Well, that's good, too. I'm glad you're honest about that. Brian, this week we want to talk to you about something that I don't know if this is something that was ever difficult for you to talk about, but I know that you have talked about it with me in the past. And for those listeners that aren't aware, you came very close to, should we say, close to losing your life during a game behind the plate. And we've shown this video around. I showed it to Michelle before the show. But for those who did not see or unaware, what can you tell us about what happened that night when you were in the Washington Nationals minor league system?
Yeah, it was a unique play. And I got into a home plate collision, which, me being the receiver of it, I was the catcher. And it was a free play. And I describe it as the perfect storm. You know, a lot of things that went wrong. We had the infield in, and I'll try to break it down a little more if there's not people that are kind of, like, you know, baseball savvy. But it was infield in. It was a tie game in the bottom of the seventh, and it was a playoff game. And there's a runner on third base with one out in a tie game. So I know that if a ground ball sits with the infield in, if the runner is running home right when the ball hits, I'm probably getting trucked at the plate. And, you know, you've been hit so much in your life that you kind of get a heads up, you know, when it's about to happen. And sure enough, there was a ground ball hit to second base, and I peeked to see if the runner was breaking home, running on contact, and he was. So immediately in my head, I'm getting hit here. The issue was the second baseman threw the ball to my right. By him throwing it to my right, now I can't see or feel the third, the runner that was coming in from third. I can't see him out of the corner of my eye, and I can't hear him running. So I don't know where he's at. And so when I caught the ball, I thought I gave him enough room to slide. And I remember when I caught the ball to my right, I turned thinking I was going to have to put a quick tag down the back corner of the plate. And he destroyed me, hit me right in the neck.
Oh, man.
And I was out cold. I was banged up. I was in a fog for a long, long time.
So you came to in the hospital, is that right?
Yeah, it was funny was, well, it's not really funny, I guess. But, you know, the crazy part was my mom and grandma flew in to see me play that day.
Oh, gosh.
And so my mom was there, and she was an RN. And so she was an OB. She was the chief of her staff in an OB unit. And so she deals with doctors 24/7. And she was really worried because for the next 4 to 5 hours, every 5 minutes, I would ask that I hold on to the ball. Every 5 minutes for 4 to 5 hours.
Wow.
And I could not answer any questions. They said it would just a couple minutes would go by, and I'd ask, so they hold on the ball.
You and asked asked them if you were able to hold on to the ball on the play? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I was just asking, did I hold on the ball?
So not like, and, I'm in pain, what happened to me, why am I in the hospital? It's, did I hold the ball?
Yes, and I obviously I don't remember saying any of this, but because I was in La La Land. And I was saying that for literally 4 to 5 hours, that when I came out of it 4 to 5 hours after the hit, I looked and I saw all my coaches were in the room. Obviously, this is well after the game now. All the coaches were in my room, in the hospital room. My mom was there, my grandma, and there's like two or three doctors. And I look around, I go, what's going on? Like, what's up, guys? And all of them looked at me with bug eyes. Because it was the first time I said something different for 4 to 5 hours.
Wow.
It was crazy. My mom was really worried because all the doctors, there was an ear, neck, and throat doctor there. There was a neurologist there, and a spinal cord expert in the room with us. And my mom knows the look of confusion among doctors. And they looked confused, and that had my mom really concerned.
Man, when you look back on it now, Brian, were you fortunate? As crazy as that sounds? Like, how serious could this have been then?
It could have been, I mean, I could have, in a sense, lost my life. You know, it was such a unique play. I had a laceration to my neck from the collision. From the home plate collision, I had a laceration to my neck. Something went into my neck 2 inches deep and missed my carotid artery by an eighth of an inch.
Oh, wow. God.
It was intense. And, you know, so immediately that was their biggest concern. They knew I had a high degree concussion. And that's a whole other story, the concussion type I had. But it was more along the lines of the confusion of the doctors of – there was a laceration in my neck 2 inches deep. There was a ton of blood, but there was air in my neck that they could see through, I don't know, it was X-ray or MRI, I'll assume MRI. And they didn't know if my esophagus was hit, how the air got in there. So when they stuck a tube down to kind of see what was going on, they saw that there was a small laceration to my esophagus. So, and they don't know what was the item that punctured my neck, obviously. They had no idea.
Could it have been a part of your own equipment or something from the player that hit you?
It could have been. And, you know, I know that they inspected all my gear. They inspected the player that did it to me, Brandon Douglas's gear. And there was no malfunctioning gear. The only thing I could think of, and I think other people put it together too, was maybe possibly the runner, Brandon Douglas, had a charm, like a necklace.
Oh my gosh.
And maybe it peaked up. And from the impact, even if it was a small charm, with how much force was being brought into me, it could have went 2 inches deep.
My goodness. What was that recovery like?
It was something you could never plan for or... And this is where, Jerry, as you know, the story gets really good. Crazy for me, but really good is for the next 30 days. I mean, I passed. Put it this way. After the 5 days in the hospital, I came out and I was a dumb enough guy to be. I went to my head coach. I go, "Hey, I'm ready to go." And he goes, "Brian, you're done. You're done." And but I passed every concussion test.
Wow.
All of them. Every concussion test I got, I not only passed, but I did better than pre-concussion. So it's kind of unique, those concussion tests. But at the same time, I thought by passing the concussion test, I was perfectly healthy. And I went into the off-season because we're in the playoffs, obviously, and we just lost in the championship series. And I went home, and I was perfectly fine for the next 30 days. No symptoms, no headaches. Nothing, no signs at all. And then about 30 days into the off season, almost a month, I started getting neck pain in the back left part of my neck. And the neck pain was getting worse and worse for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And when I say it was getting worse to the point where I couldn't turn my neck, I had to turn my whole body. It was, you know what I'm talking about? That kind of pain.
Oh, yeah.
You get sometimes,
well,
you have to turn your whole body.
I can't say it was anywhere near what you went through, but yeah, I know that feeling of not being able to move the neck.
Oh, and so the girl I was with at the time loved it because I'll buy a new pillow. It's got to be the pillow because it gave me the collision because I felt so good for 30 days. And what I ended up doing was calling the Nationals. And that was not like me. I don't like, you know, you're a catcher.
You're tough.
Supposed to be this tough guy.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't like telling people I'm hurting or that something's wrong. It's just, that's part of the job. You're used to getting hit. You're used to getting hurt. You got to bounce back and get going. And so I didn't want to tell anyone, but then it was very telling of if I called the Nationals, I was in tremendous pain. And
whoa,
so I called the Nats.
Are you in a windstorm right now?
I'm actually walking right through some wind.
Yeah.
I'll try to cover the phone a little. Let me get behind this building.
But, live radio, folks. right here.
I'm so sorry, guys.
It's okay. So you went to the Nationals. We got 3 minutes before we got a break. So you went to the Nationals team doctor, and what was determined by this whole thing?
What he said to me was he was kind of shocked that I called because he knew that wasn't like me, and he wanted to see me right away because it was such national news at that time. The play was being shown on everything from Good Morning America to ESPN to you name it. It was on a Deadspin. And they're all talking to MLB how they have to change the rule, the collision rule. But so when I called the Nationals team doctor, and I know we only got a little bit of time left, when I called the doctor, he told me that he needs to see me right away. I shouldn't drive, so on and so forth. He needs to see me right away. And so I was going to, that was Saturday, 2 days later, Monday, I was going to go see him. And on Monday, I wake up that morning and the pain's gone. No neck pain. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Now I feel like I'm a phony. And so I called Dr. Thomas, the Nats. I'm like, hey, neck's fine. I don't know what's going on, but I'm good. And he goes, not a problem. So I went to go take batting practice for the first time that day. And that's normal, Barry. As you know, you take a couple weeks off. So this is perfectly normal. And what ended up happening was I went out to go take CT in the cages, and I took two swings, and I had the worst exploding headache you could ever experience in your entire life, to the point where two swings in, I dropped to a knee, and I couldn't hit. And the headache lasted about 6 hours.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I thought it was a fluke. I went out the next day to go hit. I'm a catcher. I'm supposed to be this tough guy. I tried to hit through it. I took 20 swings, and the headache lasted about 20 to 22 hours. And that's when I kind of knew that there's something wrong with me here. And it was like something was inside of my head punching me.
Wow. Hey,
it was a headache that you can't even describe.
Brian, so here's the deal. We're out of time now, but we're going to do what they call the cliffhanger, like at the end of an episode of Batman and Robin. We can finish this story next week, so the people listening now can be wondering for the next week how this story ended, because it kind of had a happy ending, right?
So, absolutely, it did.
So why don't we do that? Because this story is so compelling, but we don't want to have you rush through it. So next week, Brian, you'll join us, and we'll finish off that story about this horrific collision.
Perfect. And I'm sorry about the windstorm.
That's
so
okay.
Sorry.
And Michelle's sorry that she talks with a Canadian accent.
I'm not sorry.
So about a week or so there, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Mr. Drolman, we'll talk to you next week, pal.
Show me the money.
Show me the money!
Derek, you better yell!
Show me the money! Show me the money!
Joining us, as he does each and every Thursday here on The Spin, is MLB player agent Joshua Kuznick. Josh, a little under the weather yesterday, I understand.
Yeah, I got knocked down by food poisoning. That was not a pleasant night.
Oh, man. No, that is never fun. But one thing you could probably do to make yourself feel better is sit in front of the TV and play a little video games, as long as you're finished by a certain time. Now, I bring this up because I was looking at your Twitter account, and it doesn't seem like you were all that too pleased that Blue Jays manager Charlie Montoyo has issued this curfew. Why do you find this to be disturbing in your mind?
Why do they get to dictate that policy? It's not a dangerous activity. So, I mean, it seems like outside of the scope of what they can do.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate just so I can rile you up a little bit, right? I would say that when you're in your place of work in the clubhouse preparing for a game, you should be focused on the game and not playing Fortnite.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just arguing about what they do on their own time. There should be no Fortnite in the damn clubhouse during a game. But when they go home, stay out of it.
I don't think they're having any issues really with them doing it at home. I think that the big problem with Charlie Montoyo is to have the curfew and say, when you're at the ballpark and it's 6 o'clock and it's time to play baseball, the video games go away.
I don't have an issue with that at all, but I don't think that's what they were saying. I really think, if there's an 11 p.m. curfew and the game ends at 11:30 and they go home and want to play Fortnite, is that going to be an issue for the club? Are you kidding me?
Well, okay, I'll play devil's advocate again with you. Last year, David Price suffered carpal tunnel syndrome and had to be DL'd. And I mean, I've had carpal tunnel syndrome before, and I know that playing video games and spending a lot of time on the computer could be something that could lead to that.
Are we going to police everything? Literally everything. Are we? So nobody can go to a bar ever again. Are they going to ban drinking?
That's a good question.
I'm asking, like, seriously, how invasive are we going to get in these guys' lives? Dangerous activities, I get. Everything else, stay out of it.
Have you had a chance to talk to any of the players that you represent, whether majors or minor leagues, about the fact that this is something that could be happening in more than just the Toronto Blue Jays? Because, I mean, we saw the story about... Yeah.
Of course, I've brought it up, and I've told all of them if it comes up to call me and ignore it.
Really?
So just don't play it during the games. Just literally don't do it at your damn job. When you go home, have fun. I don't like literally go play when you're done with your work at home and you're done with whatever your responsibilities are and you have nothing to do and you want to go play Fortnite, go play Fortnite. That's way better than a lot of other things they could be doing.
When you have contracts for players, are there stipulations usually about activities they can and cannot do? Whether
dangerous activities.
But what's considered a dangerous activity? Because I know that, you know, some
bungee jumping, motorcycles.
But see, that part I'm a little confused with, because I think that flying in an airplane or driving in a car, let's say driving in a car, is a lot more dangerous than bungee jumping. I don't know too many people who have died bungee jumping. And I also...
No, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
So why would something like bungee jumping, and same with riding a motorcycle? I mean, you know, if you're going to ban riding a motorcycle, why not ban riding a car?
That's what the lawyers are for, man. I just deal with it. But like, I mean, that's the stuff that players can't do when they sign a contract. I don't think Fortnite's going to fall under it. I guarantee you, it's some team's going to try to put that in a contract one day. And then some smart agent's going to say no, and it's going to be a holdup. And then it's going to be a race to who blinks first. Is the player going to blink first because of the video game clause, or is the team going to blink first because of the video game clause? Because it seems like that'd be a very stupid thing to test a player's patience over. That's so stupid. It is arbitrary and stupid. It's reactionary. If you want to ban it in the clubhouse, again, fine. I'm for that. Don't play it in the clubhouse on game day or when you're working. Totally fine. Rational. I am on board with that in every situation. When they leave the field and they want to play video games, any policing of that to me is incredibly stupid.
Yeah, I agree with you on the difference between dangerous activities and things that are just what you do and for fun in your spare time. Yeah, the clubhouse thing. I mean, do you hear Carlos Santana took a baseball bat into the clubhouse and smashed things up because he was so pissed seeing some of the players playing Fortnite in the clubhouse?
Good. I that's a good teammate, man. I would have done the same thing if I was a player. That's okay. Great.
Let me ask you this. And it's very, very popular in the clubhouse for players, and that's sitting around playing cards. Should playing cards fall under the same category as playing Fortnite? I mean, what's the difference between the two?
I mean, I agree with you. That's my argument. 100% I agree with you. That's exactly.
You know, I've spoken to a number of former players who, you know, played back in the 70s and 80s, and I asked them what was it like in the clubhouse prior to games. Now, there was a beer fridge in the clubhouse, and they were allowed to smoke cigarettes in the clubhouse, which just tells you the time that they played in. But they would sit around and they talk baseball. They would scout and talk about the pitcher they're facing that night if you're a hitter. And if you're a pitcher, you would spend a lot of time talking about the guy you're facing or, you know, the batters you're facing. Do you find it a little weird that ball players of today's generation spend so much time doing things other than talk baseball in the clubhouse before games?
I think it's different. It's a different atmosphere. It's a different business. There's more money now. A lot of players don't want to start helping other players who are going to take money from them. I know that sounds antithetical to the whole idea of a team, but this is a business. You know, if somebody sees a hitch in somebody else's swing, why would he try to fix it for him when he has to work on his own stuff? I mean, this is a very selfish career when you're a baseball player. And I mean, yeah, you can pine for the days of yesteryear, but like for the players now, it's a business, most of them. And yeah, they get along and yeah, everyone tries to help each other if they ask, but I just think it's different. It's much more, it's a business now. The owners have made that abundantly clear. So if they don't care, why should the players?
Speaking of the business side of things, I know you can't mention his name, but I will. Mike Trout signed this enormous, enormous deal before he ever became a free agent. So he'll be in Anaheim for the rest of his career, and he'll make, you know, lots of money and be happy and be able to buy Disney World if he wants. But there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. First of all, his contract alone is worth more money than the Tampa Bay Rays' entire payroll. And I saw some of the things that you mentioned, or you saw in tweets about his salary compared to full teams' salaries. I mean, is that a clear sign of just what is wrong with baseball right now?
Well, Jason Stark posted that Machado, Trout, and Harper, their combined contracts are more money than the Rays have spent on player salaries in the entirety of their existence. So, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I know people think, and some will look and say, well, those guys shouldn't have signed contracts that big, but I don't think that's what it's stating, right? It's stating that the problem is teams like the Rays that are being cheap about it, right?
There's no such thing as a poor baseball team. So when I hear that noise, it pisses me off. So, yeah, it's ridiculous when a team cries poverty in 2019.
We're in conversation with MLB player agent Josh Kuznick. Josh, if you are representing a high profile player and he is about to enter. Okay. I'm just saying, I'm being hypothetical because I don't want to mention names.
Yes.
But let's say you have a high profile player who's about to enter his final year in his contract. And at that point, he'll become a free agent. Would you encourage him to not accept a deal with the current team and go and test free agency? Or is a deal like the one that Mike Trout signed just too good to turn down?
I can't speak to him at all. I have my own thoughts on that. What did he get? 10 for 360, and then they had the 2 years left on the deal.
Yeah.
So it's 422 or 427. I don't even know where the 430 came from, because that's not a number that exists in reality, just so you know. It really isn't. He signed for 10, 360, and then the 2 years he already had is like 66. So it's like what? 426, which is a crazy number, but you know, let's all be accurate here. So, but I mean, it depends on the player's situation. If he's happy where he's at, he makes that decision. I'm just here to give the best advice possible. But the way free agency is, I would answer this, like, who, if the owners devalue free agency, why would the players continue to value free agency? Like, everyone's devalued at this point. So until a new CBA is in place, like, this is going to keep happening, and we're going to keep having these issues. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's a mess right now. I mean, I personally, if a guy got his money early and the option was to go into free agency, I would just ask him, okay, like, what are the benefits of going to free agency when you have all this money right here? And then if the pros outweigh the cons and we keep the money, if it doesn't, then we leave. I mean, it's just simple eyeballing it, you know, at that point.
And again, I mean, and I know it's hard to say in a situation where a guy accepts a deal that big that it's not necessarily about the money, but when you compare it to what could have been out there for him on the open market this offseason.
Sure.
You know, he did. I mean, it's probably he did leave some money out on the table.
Well, I would put it this way. Like, whatever LeBron James or Michael Jordan or Wayne Gretzky signed for, whatever they signed for is a bargain. So I guess same rules apply.
Yeah. I do want to touch on something else. And again, I know you're not a doctor, but I just want to get your opinion on this, because my co-host Matt and I were talking about this earlier in the show. And that was the fact that the Blue Jays have a player who may need Tommy John surgery. And it's very common for pitchers to have Tommy John surgery.
And I've gone through it with clients. I've literally seen one of my clients' elbow ligament at Dr. Andrew's office.
Well, there you go. And I am sure that there are things that players could take that could help speed up the recovery process. And
HGH, as Andy Pettit taught us, yes, HGH allegedly heals your recovery faster.
Okay.
And it is...
So do you think that it should be okay for a player, make an exception for players that are on the DL and are missing the entire season, to take HGH if it will help the healing process, but make sure that it is completely out of their system before they are ready to perform again at the major leagues?
I think it's more complicated than that, because the doctors all know more than we do about the residual effects of after usage. It still changes your body. So I can see why they'd want to keep it out, but I would answer it the way I answer people about how I feel about the steroid era. Is the, you know, people complain about who was clean, who was dirty, who wasn't, whatever. I think the problem I think people have with that era is that it wasn't equal access for everyone, where not everyone was able to make the same choice whether we wanted to use steroids or not. And, you know, in any scenario. So I always ask people, if steroids, if somebody was given a choice if they could cheat or not, every single player, would then that era be okay? Because at least everyone had a choice. And the thing with this is, I think we're already past what I just talked about. And in that limited scope of what you're describing, it's tough to answer because you don't know what the lingering effects would be. You can be out of your system and still change your body. So I can see why they want to keep it out. But like, yeah, in a vacuum, if there was a magic drug that could help you heal faster and make your body better, and then it doesn't help you play better once it's out of your system after a certain point, would that be great, that magic pill? Yes, I would sign up for that magic pill. Unfortunately, I don't believe it exists right now.
So what do you know about what a player can take or do to help?
I know everything. I have a list of things they can take and do from the PA and from Major League Baseball. And if it's not on the list, they can't do it.
And a lot of these would help somebody after having Tommy John surgery as far as dealing with pain?
I mean, there's stuff on the banned list that would help everybody, but it's banned because it has other health effects also. I don't think there's anything that just isolates healing. I think everything that would help healing would also help a lot of other things, which is why, you know, Mark McGwire's defense for years was I took HGH so I could aid in recovery. And it's like, well, isn't part of performing being on the field? And there's that whole argument too.
You know, next week, I'd like to talk to you about this because I don't know if you're aware, but here in Ontario, cannabis is now legal.
I would love to talk about that. I have lots of opinions on it. I have my own medical marijuana card in Florida.
Yes. And one of your big clients, Jeremy Jeffers, is a guy who has had to use it because of dealing with epilepsy in the past. And we know how that ended for him. So yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, he doesn't use it anymore. He can't while he's a baseball player. Yeah. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's something I definitely want to get into. So save.
I would love to talk about it. I there are many quotes about me. I mean, I brought up the issue of race and this years ago, regrettably, and I spit it out wrong. But I think it's a lot. I could speak more clearly on this issue right now. My feelings have crystallized on it for sure.
All right, let's save it, and we'll form our discussion for next week. And
absolutely,
let's talk weed next week.
Absolutely, man. I'm down for sure.
Josh, for those who want to hear more of you, I know you have your own podcast and a Twitter account for your podcast. So let us know where people can go to listen to that.
Oh, yeah. The podcast is still on natsgm.com. It is the Joshua Cousins Experience. If you want to hear an hour of me being insane and not filtered, which is fun. And there's no edit. Well, there are some edits, but, you know, it's not my call there either. And on Twitter, it's just my name, at Joshua Kuznick, which is also, incidentally, my Instagram, which I had to make public because I'm trying to get verified finally.
Well, that's good. And I'm also very proud of you for the fact that you have not used the F word once in any of our radio conversations.
No, I've been very well behaved because I like your country.
Hey, go have a nice, juicy, greasy pizza and enjoy. And hopefully no more food poisoning.
I'm going to do right now, man. I got the okay from my docs. I'm going to go eat right now.
Josh, talk to you next week, pal.
Thanks, Barry. I'll talk to you soon.
There is Joshua Kuznick, MLB player agent, and that'll do it for another episode of The Spin Podcast Edition. We also want to thank Brian Giroliman for joining us, Bill Harris, and Jason Grilley. And don't forget to go to alomarsports.com for more information on that really cool Seattle trip. And for more information, if you want to head off to Fantasy Camp. And as somebody who's been there twice, I can tell you, oh man, it is a lot of fun. You can listen to The Spin each and every weekday from 4 till 7 o'clock on News Talk Saga 960 AM. If you are out of the listening area, you can stream it on our website, nsrmedia.ca. For Michelle Storino, Matt McFarlane, I'm Barry Davis. Thank you so much for listening to The Spin, and thank you, as always, for making us a part of your week.